Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This program contains dramatizations of real events. Some names and timelines have been changed. Listener discretion is advised.
I definitely had a bad feeling about that place, and that was the last time I didn't trust my gut.
The sheer brutality and coldness of crime, it was just very horrific.
They had a daunting job and no evidence.
What the hell happened?
Silver Lakes is about 100 miles northeast of L.A., and it's in the San Bernardino Mountains. There's two man-made lakes that draw water from the Mojave River. So to have these huge lakes in the middle of the desert is an amazing thing.
There is a long dirt road that pretty much goes from Silver Lakes to Ellendale. That's where the bunker was. It's very remote. There's just nothing out there. If you'd never been out there and not familiar with the area, you would just drive by this place and not even know it was there. It was essentially an Air Force bunker during World War II. People have described it as kind of apocalyptic because it was this relic. It was just, it had just been sitting there abandoned for over 20 years. So it was a well-known place for teens to hang out and people to camp out, shoot off guns, party. As a parent, this would not be the kind of place that I would want my kid hanging out, especially at nighttime. It's pitch black out there at night, and who knows what can go wrong.
It definitely had a kind of creepy tone to it. My mom thought the place was cursed the first time she saw it. Turns out she was right.
I don't know how she discovered this place, but Bodie knew about the bunker far more than I did. And she said, "Mom, you gotta see this place. It's amazing." She eventually took me out there.
Bodie, we are two women in the middle of nowhere.
Mom.
If anything happens to us, nobody will find us. And I bet there's no cell service out here.
Mom, it's fine. You just have to see it. Come on. It's so cool. You're going to love it. It's got these huge iron doors and everything. No way. Mom, you have to come in. It's so cool. Come on.
Shotgun shells.
I felt the ominousness of this place. All my antennas were up.
You're overreacting.
Bodie, don't ever come out here again.
It's just a cool abandoned place.
Get in the car. Give me the keys.
I told her, I said, "Bodie, this is totally unsafe. Your cell phone doesn't work here. I'm not a telepath. I wouldn't know you're in trouble. You would be SOL here. You can't be here. It's not safe."
Bodhi. Honey, I know you think it's cool, but there is something wrong about this place. You'll understand one day when you have your own kids.
I tried to convince her, but she went quiet on me. She stopped talking. I know now, looking back, that she already made up her mind. When we first moved to Silver Lakes, Bodhi was in elementary school. When she was younger, she was very much an explorer. She was energetic, observing. She constantly talked. She'd tell all kinds of fun, fantastic, make-believe stories.
Bodhi was my best friend. She had a really, really interesting imagination. Anything expressionary, she would pick up in minutes. And when Bodhi was a bit older, she got really into music and film.
I'm going to record you. Go ahead. Say, what was I asking you before?
What my wishes are?
Yeah, do your wishes again.
Okay. Another one would be to be able to change someone's life. With a movie or with something. They just change the way they think. Makes them somehow better. Make them like themselves more.
Very cool.
Zen was with us when we moved to Silver Lakes, but soon afterwards, Zen moved to Newport Beach. I would drive down, and Bodhi would get to go be with Zen at his house and with his friends. For Bodhi, Zen was the big brother, and she looked up to him, and they had a very, very special relationship.
I was always overjoyed to have Bodhi over. Even though I had work intermittently while she was going to be visiting, I couldn't wait. Usually my mom would drop her off. And she'd stay for a day or two.
And then I would come pick her up, and that's how we did it.
Definitely.
Hey, I was just looking for Zen. I'm Kurt.
Hi. I think he's working on someone's computer in another office.
You mind if I just hang out here?
I'm actually in the middle of something.
Hey, Kurt.
Hey.
I was working in Thompson's office today. I told you that.
Did you? It must have totally slipped my mind. I was here talking.
My sister. My 16-year-old sister, Bodhi. And why don't we catch up tomorrow? Cool?
Sure thing, man. See you more.
She wasn't the kind of little sister that really needed a lot of protection. Usually, she had a mean left hook, and she was a lot stronger than she looked.
Wow. We'll catch up tomorrow. Cool. Yeah, but thanks.
Yeah, get your stuff. It's time for game night. At Casa Potter!
The plan was to just hang out over the next couple of days, but the plan changed pretty much the next day. Nobody was the same afterwards.
It was Friday, and I was supposed to come and pick Bodhi up. Bodhi calls me and she says, Mom, there's no point in you coming down here. My friend Andrew is going to be down here to see family. And I said, he's got family down there? Yeah, he's got family. He's seen people, but I can hitch a ride with him. And so I didn't think much of it. I thought it would be okay. I said, okay, Bodhi, I'm going to let you stay with Zen and you come home on Saturday. You have to be home by noon. And she said, yes. And she says, I love you. Bye, Mom. That was it.
I got a call from my mom saying that one of Bodhi's friends was going to be coming and picking her up. I wasn't thrilled by that, but she told me as a trusted family friend and that it'd be fine. And we never talked about what day he was coming. That was the big one. Because Bodhi had talked to both of us, and when she talked to her mom, she was supposed to go back the next day. I believe that was a Saturday. And when she talked to me, she was leaving Friday night. And so she got a whole 12 hours where nobody was expecting her to be anywhere.
Like most teenagers, Bodhi had a little rebellious streak in her. And she had a friend come and pick her up that day and drive her out to the bunker. What happened there isn't the worst and terrifying beyond belief.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Bodhi's good friend, Andrew Peterson, came down, picked her up, and drove her back up to the high desert and to the bunker, where Bruce Middleton, her boyfriend, along with a couple other friends, had arranged a birthday party for a good friend of theirs.
Everyone has a drink. Everybody. Here's the Derek.
Okay. So, I know that you've been really allowed to be here. Thank you.
Okay, look.
Bruce?
Hey, you made it.
I feel like such a sneak. I mean, my mom would not approve.
She doesn't need to find out.
They were all having a good time and, you know, drinking, and a bunch of folks showed up with Christmas trees and parked their vehicle on top of the bunker and started lighting a big bonfire using discarded Christmas trees. So the party started dying down somewhere around 2-ish, and by 4 o'clock, the last people had left. And the only people that were left were Bodhi and Bruce, who told their friends they were just gonna, you know, sleep there overnight and stay. And then a little while later, Bruce gets a call on his cell phone from a friend saying, hey, he left his iPod in your vehicle. Do you have it? And his friend asks, oh, I'm sorry, were you sleeping? And Bruce said, yeah, but that's okay, and tells his friend who called him that, yeah, he had the iPod, it was there, and his friend says, okay, I'll let you go back to sleep, thanks. So that was the last contact Bruce had with the friend, and that's when every parent's worst nightmare came true.
At 4:30 in the morning, I wake up with it like I was shot, you know, or something hit me in the heart. I walk outside and I see this raven and it's cawing like crazy. And I find that very odd. They don't normally do that at that hour, but it's her favorite bird. Bodhi would call me every morning at sunrise, clockwork. And I walk back in, and I'm waiting for the 6:30 phone call. And it never came. And then I just started pacing, and I kind of felt like is it completely uneasy? Like something really has happened, but I don't know what. It was a mother's intuition that something was very, very amiss. I left all kinds of messages on her phone. Of course, reached out to Andrew, and no answer. Of course, I was calling Zen.
At first, I just honestly thought that she had pulled some sort of snag and staying with her boyfriend. I knew nothing about this birthday party. So last thing I knew was this guy came, picked up my sister, and disappeared. And I'm fuming. I definitely wanted to have a conversation with this kid and didn't really care how much of a family friend he was at that point because I was afraid and I felt lied to.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
Eventually, I got around to calling the police. And when I first talked to the dispatcher, she said, well, it's probably, you know, she ran off for a little bit. She'll be back, that kind of thing. We don't really do a missing persons in that short a time. I was completely frustrated with them. So I'm really lost at what to do. I'm all I can do is keep calling people and asking, you know, and that's what I did. Then Bruce's mom calls.
Hello. No, I haven't heard from Bodhi either.
And she's looking for Bruce and asking where he is. Now I know something's amiss because, you know, they're both missing.
Bruce's and Bodhi's mother had called their friends saying that their children had not come home. And so some friends decided to go drive back to the bunker. They get to the bunker and they see Bruce's Jeep still parked there. Bodhi and Bruce are not in the Jeep.
Hey, guys, go check over there. I'm going to check in there, okay? Guys, Miss Clark.
Bruce is laying face up, his knees tucked under him like he had been just sitting on his knees and went completely back. And his arms were in front of his head. It appeared that his eye had been gouged out. They get in the truck and speed off to the highway where one of them calls 911.
Around 3 o'clock, someone calls me, a girl. I don't know her name. And she says, Miss Ladd, you know that Bruce was shot. Bodhi was nowhere to be found. And then I decided when I got that call, I went over to my girlfriend's house. Who I happened to also work with, and asked her to come with me to the bunker. There were police cars everywhere and a big trailer there. There were a lot of children there. They were all there because they heard that Bruce was shot. The moment I walked out of the car and identified myself, police immediately took me in the trailer. And I was in that trailer till almost 2 a.m. in the morning.
There was a lot of going back and forth and conjecture about where Bodhi was. I was worried and definitely had a bad feeling about it. And that was the last time I didn't trust my gut.
The crime scene was a pretty extensive investigation. The bunker was pitch black. even in the middle of the day. And if you don't have a flashlight, you can't see your hands in front of your face. There was a lot of winding corridors and different rooms. You could definitely get lost in there if you weren't familiar with it. The detectives find Bruce's body exactly where the kids told them it would be, and they noticed that he had a gunshot wound to the head and the chest. And then they also find Bodie's body. She had a blue sleeping bag wrapped around her waist. I mean, she too had been shot in the chest and also the right side of her head. They immediately determined that the wounds were shotgun wounds. Given the nature of the wounds, they ruled suicide, murder-suicide out pretty quickly. Teenage couple, 18-year-old boy, 16-year-old girl, brutally murdered, good kids, good families. This was just senseless, brutal, and horrific all around. What the hell happened?
I don't know how police work. I just know they didn't tell me. They wouldn't officially tell me that it was my daughter. But I knew. I already knew that Bodie was dead. I knew, because she would never leave Bruce. She would stay by him. The official word came days later through a coroner who brought her jewelry to me. I was in shock, and I could feel her. I could feel her wanting to talk to me, and she did. She said, "Mom, don't feel guilty. You told me a million times not to go there. I love you, I love you, I love you," and she faded out. I don't remember much after that. Everything became a haze.
The news was the worst moment of my entire life. A moment that has come back to me a couple of times in nightmares. I had no clue who would ever want to do this to my sister. And no one else did either.
Well, at the time this happened, it was definitely one of the biggest murder cases and had the most media attention of the many murder cases I've covered in the 20-plus years I've been doing this. What struck me the most about this case was just the horrific nature, where it occurred, how it occurred, who the victims were. This was a tragedy to the full extreme. What would be the motive for killing these two kids in this bunker? It's one of those stories everyone wanted answers to.
We need every single can and bottle, dust it for fingerprints.
The police spent like a day or two processing the scene because there was so much debris and everything in there.
And I want to identify the type of guns these shell casings came from.
The bunker was a popular place for people to go shoot their guns, so finding bullet casings was common there. So what was key in this particular case was, okay, here's a casing that's found in proximity to where these two dead bodies were found. The night of the murders, you had 30-plus people show up at this bunker. But they were able to quickly ascertain, you know, most of the people, you know, that was in Bodie and Bruce's circle of friends. Then it was just a matter of tracking down the other 15, 20 people who were there that night as well that these kids didn't know. The police put out a press release. People read it, word gets out. So it didn't take long for a lot of the other people who were there at the bunker to contact police and give them more names.
Mick? Isn't the male victim's name Bruce?
It's a nickname.
They were asking questions about, well, did Bodie have any jealous boyfriends or any ex-boyfriends?
Mick? No, I don't know anyone named Mick. I mean, Bruce did say that Bodie had just broken up with some guy before they started dating, but I don't know anyone named Mick. There was some guy at the party calling himself Mac, but I didn't know him either.
You sure you don't mean Mick?
Yeah, I'm sure.
All right. Thanks for your time.
That's it. That's all the names on our list. I don't know where we go from here.
The investigators were working around the clock. They worked very, very hard to find out who did this. And I was not of my mind at all. So I'm not sure I was much help. My whole life was around Bodie. I remember her once saying to me, Mom, you need to get a life. I said, I'll have a life when you're 18. So it was very traumatic for me. I was completely out of it.
From what they told me, the police were using every piece of evidence constantly. All of it was active investigation. They talked to, as far as I understand, nearly your entire school, and nobody knew anything. Honestly, I had to say, you know, hey, her killer's out there, you know. Go find him. Go find whoever did this, you know. But I just kept trying to remind myself they're doing their job, and this is how they do it. But the real break in the case wasn't until the bad guys messed up really bad and bragged.
The detectives get a call from this guy named Jeff, who said that his friend David Smith called him the night of the killing.
Hey. Yeah, do you have anywhere we can, like, camp out, chill, hang out, shoot some guns?
Smith asks Jeff, hey, do you know of any places where we can hang out and camp out and shoot our guns? And Jeff recommends the bunker and gives them general directions of where it's at.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
And then, shortly after the murders occurred, Jeff gets a call from Smith.
Hey, if anybody asks, we weren't at the bunker, all right? No. I can't talk about it on the phone.
Jeff tells the detective that Smith sounded scared and says, hey, if anyone asks, we were not at the bunker. Jeff asks for more details, and Smith says it was life-changing. And then basically, Smith tells him everything that happened.
He said what?
Why did he miss his dad?
Oh, because I went on a gospel choir with
you. It was between 11 and midnight when David Smith and Colin McLaughlin and Cameron Thompson showed up at the bunker. And so they start mingling with Bodie and Bruce's crowd. And Smith had a bottle of raspberry Bacardi he was passing around.
I got you right here. That's it. Go ahead.
As the party ended, everyone started to go home. Apparently, these boys had decided to come back to the party to rob it.
Wakey, wakey. Eggs and bakey.
We don't have any money, man. Please, just leave us alone.
Come on. Let's go for a trip to the bunker. Get out.
Get out of the car.
Get out of the car. Get out of the car.
You're off me.
Ooh, a little feisty. Got a feisty one, babe.
Come on.
Come on.
Okay. Let's go.
At least get our shoes.
You won't need your shoes. Let's go.
Bodie and Bruce had no idea who these people were. I can imagine when they saw the guns pointed at them and they're getting ordered out of the vehicle, that must have been quite terrifying to them. And then when they're told to start walking into the bunker, I imagine they must have been fearing the worst. Colin McLaughlin wanted to rob someone, and so he and David Smith ordered Bodie and Bruce out of the car, and then they marched them into the bunker. Cameron Thompson stayed inside the van as a lookout.
On your knees.
Okay, listen, we don't want any more trouble.
On your knees.
Okay, no problem.
Listen, just let us go. I swear we will not say anything to anyone.
Hey. I can get you money, man.
Huh.
No, please. 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 Please!
According to McLaughlin, she said, you'll face God for what you did to Bruce. And they said, there is no God. That's why we can do this to you.
David. Shoot her. Grab the shells.
So, at the end of the day, the lead boy decided that he was going to take it up a notch. They dragged him at gunpoint into the bunker and shot them in the back of the head. As a joke. So, a huge break in the case was due to McLaughlin and David bragging to a buddy. And he came forward and, you know, couldn't believe what he was hearing. That, you know, people he knew killed some kids.
The friend called the police and reported it. And then that friend also showed police where they lived. Police got the search warrant, and they eventually found the weapons that were used and other items of evidence. David Smith came from a Mormon family. His father was a police chief. He was a smart, gifted kid attending UC Riverside on a track scholarship. And he took that wrong, fork in the road and just started getting involved in petty crimes, robberies, things like that. McLaughlin, on the other hand, came from a highly dysfunctional family. He had violent tendencies. He was expelled from school for planning a shooting in the quad.
When he was 16 years old and in trouble and in court, the DA said he's a walking time bomb. So they knew that this boy was trouble.
McLaughlin's father owned a lot of guns. And the night of the murders, McLaughlin basically just asked his dad, hey, we're going camping. Can we take the guns? His dad said, sure. And that was that. Thompson was the link between McLaughlin and Smith because Thompson was a friend of McLaughlin's and Smith was also a friend of Thompson's.
They wanted the death penalty on McLaughlin, but Bodie was very much against violence of any kind. An eye for an eye makes the whole world blind. That's Gandhi's words that Bodie used almost daily with her friends. Revenge has no place in her life. So we requested no death penalty.
The sentencing hearing for McLaughlin was sickening. He smiled and even laughed during the sentencing, snickering, sticking his tongue out. Animal. It's just an animal. The judge threw the book at him. She gave him max for everything, and it was cathartic to hear.
Bodhi was driven to do good in the world. She was a bright star, and we've lost her. And I'm hoping that her death is not in vain. After Bodhi died, I was on a mission to get the bunker destroyed. I was deeply concerned that another child could get hurt there. So I would just approach people in town and ask them to sign the petition, and everyone signed it. I don't remember exactly when, but they blew it up. You can't even find where it is now.
Bodhi was always looking for something that was ugly to turn into something beautiful. And she put a lot of happiness into the world. She really, really got the most out of life in the time she had. She didn't live in fear. She would never want anybody to ever take fear away from us. Yeah, spend a day, be like her. Just be fearless.
Bye.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.